This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Irit Tamir, director of Oxfam America's private sector department. Irit Tamir is here to tell us about Oxfam's Behind the Barcodes campaign to spotlight the unequal and unjust treatment of farmers and workers in our global food system, and to highlight the role and responsibility of supermarket giants. Welcome, Irit.
Thank you.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about Oxfam and Oxfam America?
Oh, sure. Oxfam America is an anti-poverty organization. We work all around the world in almost 80 countries, and we really work on the root causes of poverty. We believe that everyone in the world can have enough food to eat, but because of the injustices around the world, people are being left hungry. And so we really try to look at root causes and address those root causes and really fight the wrongs of poverty.
Why is Oxfam launching the Behind the Barcodes campaign? What is the goal?
The goal really is to get supermarkets to take responsibility for their supply chain and to respect the human rights of people working in those supply chains and really help lift people out of poverty by doing so.
Would you comment on the growing power of the top supermarket chains?
Absolutely. So what we've seen over the last couple decades is a real concentration of power in food retailing. And, you know, we can see that just here in our own market in the U.S., where we've seen a number of mergers and acquisitions. Of course, I'm sure many of your listeners will be aware that Amazon recently bought Whole Foods. But even prior to that, Ahold, which is a Dutch company, and Delhaize merged to become one company. And they now own quite a number of food supermarket chains around the country that you probably know. Food Lion, Giant, Stop and Shop are just a few of those, but they have a number of supermarket chains in the U.S. And there have been other mergers as well. And then, of course, you know, we have right here in our own backyard in the U.S., Walmart, which is the largest food retailer in the world.
What portion of the profit from selling food at the larger supermarkets goes to the farmers and workers in the supply chain?
That's a really good question, because our research that we did for this campaign really looked at 12 commodities, and we chose commodities that are quite common in grocery stores, looking at commodities that, you know, typical consumers would purchase. So things like tea, green beans, seafood, shrimp. So we really tried to look at commodities that everyday people would just go into their store and buy, and see how much of that value is going down to workers and producers versus how much of the value in that value chain is going to retailers. And, you know, unfortunately, we found some disturbing trends, which is that over the last decade or so, more and more of the value that is being created in these value chains is going to retailers, and less is going to producers and workers. And so that's the problem. And we're also seeing that the costs for these workers and producers is also rising. So that means they're getting less. For example, supermarkets are keeping more money that their customers spend at the checkout, almost as much as 50% on some products, while small-scale farmers and workers receive only a fraction of that, sometimes 5%. And as I said, the trend has been for retailers to be getting more of that over the last decade, with farmers and workers getting less.
Would you say more about how the policies of the large supermarkets work to drive down wages for farmers and workers in the supply chain?
You know, if you think about it, these supermarkets, and as I said, they're getting bigger and bigger, which means that they're getting more and more power. They're capturing more market share. And that means that suppliers are going to have less and less choice for who they're selling their product to. And of course, that then means that buyers, in this case, the supermarkets, will be able to dictate the terms, and in fact, they do dictate the terms by which they'll purchase products. There really isn't a negotiation that happens anymore between supermarkets and their suppliers. The supermarkets dictate the terms, both in terms of quality, in terms of timing, in terms of price. They also are able to charge their suppliers with all sorts of fees. So in terms of where the product will be placed on shelves, you know, for premium shelf space, they'll charge a fee. These are what we call unfair trade practices, really. And that's sort of a technical term, but it essentially means that supermarkets are using their power to really manipulate their suppliers to some degree. And that kind of manipulation then has an effect down the line and gets pushed down to the farmers and workers who are actually growing and producing our food. When suppliers have to cut costs, one of the ways they cut costs is in labor, because it's one of the more flexible pieces that they can cut costs on, right? They can't cut costs usually on the raw materials that they may need or the inputs to grow a product. So they'll cut costs when it comes to labor, or they'll ask for their workers to work harder and faster with less breaks in order to meet more demanding deadlines and lower prices.
Oxfam did a survey of workers and small-scale farmers in the food supply chain. What is life like for them? What did you find from your survey?
Yeah, so Oxfam looked at about 5 countries, and we surveyed workers that were working in a number of supply chains and were growing and producing these very common commodities. And we surveyed them around what we call food security, basically asking whether these people were going hungry, whether they had enough money to actually pay for the food that they themselves need to survive. And the ironic paradox of this whole thing is that the people who are growing and producing our food are often going hungry. So just an example, in the Philippines, 72% of women small-scale banana farmers surveyed said they had worried about feeding their family in the previous month. Among workers on board fishing vessels in Southeast Asia, for example, who work 14-hour days, workers reported being at sea for 27 or 28 days a month, and they received irregular payments of $45 to $180 per month, just $1.50 to $6 per day without any explanation. Many of them also told us that they go hungry. So this is a real problem for these workers, is that not only are they not making enough to live on, but in many cases, not even enough to feed their families and themselves.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Irit Tamir, director of Oxfam America's private sector department. Our topic is Oxfam's Behind the Barcodes campaign, and you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. Let's now talk about the details of your campaign and your scorecard. Why develop a scorecard?
Well, it's a good question. Oxfam's had some experience with scorecards in the past. We just ran a campaign from about 2013 to 2015, which looked at the top 10 food and beverage companies. That campaign was called Behind the Brands, and it also had a scorecard. And what we found was that the scorecard really initiated a race to the top among those 10 companies, and we really saw tremendous improvement over the 3 years in which we had that campaign and that scorecard, where companies had scored quite low in our first scorecard, but over time, those scores really increased. It helped by highlighting the issues that we saw as critical for these companies to take on board. And we're hoping that this campaign will have similar effect. This campaign is a little bit more ambitious even in its scope. It's looking at 16 companies across 4 different markets, the U.S., the U.K., Netherlands, and Germany. And it's looking at 4 themes: transparency, how these companies are transparent in terms of their supply chain, in terms of their policies, who they do business with and how they do business, in terms of how they treat their workers in their supply chain. So we didn't look at how they're treating their own employees. I want to make that clear. This is about how they're treating workers in their supply chains, how their policies impact those workers, and how their policies impact small farmers and women, who are oftentimes the ones that are living in poverty. The scorecard has about 93 indicators, so each company can get a total of 93 points on a 100% scale. And the indicators are designed to really be a yes or no answer for the most part, so that it's really clear cut what it is we expect companies to do. And if you look at the scorecard, which is available online, you can actually see where we found the policy on the company's website or why we're giving them credit for a particular indicator. And what we're hoping really is that by having the supermarkets together in this scorecard, they can see how their peers are scoring and what their peers are doing, and hopefully that will spur them into action as well, right? Because if one company is able to do something, then we think all companies really are able to do something. And so we think that having that comparison really helps companies to see where they can go. But, you know, we want them to go even further because no company, unfortunately, scored well. The highest scoring company was at 42%, and that was a UK company. The highest scoring company in the U.S. was Walmart, and they were only at 17%. So we're really challenging these companies to not only go as far as their peers, but to go beyond and really respect the human rights and take human suffering out of these supply chains.
How did you collect the data for your scorecard?
Well, that's a really great question. You know, it takes us a long time, actually, to do these assessments because we try to be quite inclusive in how we develop a scorecard and then how we assess the companies. So in developing the scorecard, we have issue-specific experts within Oxfam that are helping to create the indicators, but they're doing so by really reaching out to other experts in the field to get their input on what is it that we should be measuring. And there's been a lot of indices and metrics and benchmarks out there already by a whole host of organizations. And one thing Oxfam didn't want to do was either create new metrics or new expectations for these companies beyond what others have done. So we really tried to make sure that we were integrating what others have done. So there's been a lot of good work out there by groups like Know the Chain, the Corporate Human Rights Benchmark. These are very well-known indices to a lot of these companies, and we really tried to take on board a lot of the learnings and the indicators that were in a lot of these other benchmarks. And then, as I said, we reached out to a whole host of stakeholders, so unions, people that work on the ground with these communities. We tried to get them to also give us good feedback on the best way to measure these supermarkets. And then we asked the companies. As we were developing the indicators, we reached out to companies and asked them to comment on the scorecard and give us their own feedback about what would be good to measure in terms of these indicators. Then we do our assessment. So we look at all the publicly available policies that these companies have. We comb through all their documents online, and there are many oftentimes, supplier codes of conduct, sustainability reports, their websites. So we're really looking for anything that raises expectations for their suppliers or commitments by the company themselves. And then we're assessing the companies. We go back to the companies with that assessment and say, here's our assessment of you. Tell us if we got something wrong. Let us know if we've missed something. Or here's an opportunity to tell us why we should have given you credit where we didn't give you credit. And then we have that dialogue with companies. Then we finalize the assessment. So that's how we go through that process. And it's quite a long period. It took us well over a year to both develop the indicators and do the assessments.
Would you say more about how the different U.S. companies compare with each other, both overall and then also in the four different categories that you evaluated?
I think we were actually quite surprised, and I think listeners may be surprised as well, that Walmart did score the highest among the U.S. companies. Again, I want to emphasize two things here. One is that no company scored well. 17% out of 100%, I think we can all agree, is not a good score. It's a failing one. That said, it was the highest among the U.S. companies. I think the other thing to just point out is that this is an assessment of how Walmart is doing in its sourcing. It's not about its own workers. I think if we had assessed policies related to its own workers, the scorecard could have come out quite differently. So I want to make sure listeners know that. And then from there, you have the other five companies that we assessed in the U.S. You have Ahold, which came in at 5%. Albertsons came in at 8%. Kroger was a resounding 0%. They got no points. And Whole Foods was only a 2%. And I think for many listeners, that may be the one that might be most shocking, is that Whole Foods, which I think really has marketed itself as a sustainable grocer, only came out with 2%.
How do the ratings of U.S. supermarkets compare to the ratings of European supermarkets overall?
That's a really great question, too, because I think overall it's disappointing to see that the U.S. supermarkets overall don't fare quite as well as the European supermarkets. The Walmart was one of the higher performing supermarkets among all the supermarkets that we assessed. I think they came in at number 3 with 17%. The highest scoring supermarket was Tesco, which is a UK supermarket, and after that was Sainsbury, another UK supermarket. There was a Dutch supermarket that performed after Walmart, and then I think that there's quite a number of them in the single digits, including Aldi, Lidl, Jumbo, Morrisons, and a number of others that are in both UK, Germany, and the Netherlands.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Irit Tamir, Director of Oxfam America's Private Sector Department. Our topic is Oxfam's Behind the Barcodes campaign. What are companies doing to improve the well-being of workers in their supply chains? What did they get right based on your evaluation? Even though the scores were low, they did get some points, at least some supermarkets did.
Yes, that's true. So the worker theme, I think, overall tends to be one of the better scoring themes. But nonetheless, companies still didn't do as well as we would have liked. And just an example of this is, again, you know, I'm going to look at Whole Foods, who only scored a 4% on the issue of workers, and Kroger, as I said before, which scored 0%. The highest score on our worker theme was, again, Tesco, which was overall the highest performing company. I think here again, Walmart came out the highest in terms of U.S. companies. And in terms of what they got right, I think companies do have some policies in place when it comes to workers. And so we will see that oftentimes companies will have in their supplier code of conduct things like no forced labor, no child labor, you know, the kinds of things that we would expect that are really what we would call just basic requirements for suppliers around minimum standards of what they need to be providing. Where I think companies start to fail is in how they're supporting suppliers in terms of ensuring that they can comply with these kinds of requirements. Another area where we see companies falling down is around things related to trade unions and making sure that they're sourcing from suppliers that really respect the rights of workers to form trade unions, to collectively bargain, to really ensure that they are prioritizing suppliers with those policies. I think another area where we see companies falling down is on their due diligence. So one of the things that's really started to come into play in the business and human rights field is the idea of doing human rights impact assessments, which is something that we expect companies to do ever since the UN Guiding Principles were adopted back in 2011 on business and human rights. And basically, those principles tell companies that in order to respect human rights in their supply chains and in their business operations, they actually need to assess the impact of those operations and supply chains on the human rights of people. And one of the things we haven't seen is the uptake by supermarkets in actually doing those assessments. So really, no U.S. company has done what we would call a human rights impact assessment, which is really understanding what is happening in your supply chain understanding how your business model is impacting the human rights of others. So how, for example, is the purchasing practices of supermarkets really affecting workers in supply chains, in processing plants in Thailand or in Indonesia, where workers are being asked to work many hours, long, hard days with very little breaks, not given the right equipment to do the work, often facing safety and health consequences, where women may be getting tested for pregnancy, and if they go out on maternity leave, they come back in lower paid positions. So these are the kinds of things that we would expect supermarkets to be determining whether or not their sourcing policies and the way they purchase products might be contributing to all of that.
So would you just underscore your key recommendations for supermarkets to improve?
So yeah, what we're asking companies to do is actually no show and act on the risk of human rights violations that are faced by women and men in supermarket supply chains, to guarantee safe working conditions and equal opportunities for women, and to fairly share the significant revenues in the food industry with the women and men who produce our food. Our research really highlighted all of these things, and that's what we're asking companies to do.
How hard would it be economically for the supermarkets to ensure that farmers and workers in the food supply chain receive a living wage? What would be the impact?
Well, that's really a great question, because I think many of your listeners hearing this will say, well, does this just mean higher consumer prices if you want workers and farmers to get more of the value from these products? And the good news is that it wouldn't take much, actually, to give workers and farmers more of the consumer price. And prices wouldn't necessarily have to go up at the checkout line. It would mean a very small percentage coming back to workers and farmers from that value chain. So supermarkets have the power and the ability to do this, and consumers really can demand it from them.
What has been the response of companies to the scorecard so far?
Well, we've had sort of mixed results, frankly. We've had some really great engagement with some of the companies in the scorecard. Almost all the European supermarkets have been engaging with Oxfam, although not all of them, but most of them. And I would say in the U.S., we've had less engagement with a few of the companies. And what's been really surprising to us is the lack of engagement by Whole Foods, because we would have thought that they would have been a company that would have been more eager to engage with Oxfam.
What do you see as the key challenges of implementing your recommendations for supermarkets?
Oxfam recognizes that these problems are really deep-rooted and that it's going to take a whole host of stakeholders coming together to really solve these issues, including governments, who have the primary responsibility of protecting people's human rights. So we know that, and we work on policy as well with governments. However, we really think that supermarkets can bring a lot of power behind solving these problems. And supermarkets even have quite a lot of sway with the governments from where they source. So one of our asks is to also do advocacy with governments. We really want supermarkets not only to change how they do business in their supply chains, but to also engage their peers, their competitors, and governments around these issues, because we think together we can really solve these problems. So that's all to say that we know that these are tough issues and they're challenging, and it's going to take a lot of stakeholders coming together. But we also think that supermarkets have a distinct responsibility under these new UN guiding principles, and that they can help to pave the way forward for solving these problems.
Well, what's next? Where do you plan to go from here with your Behind the Barcodes campaign?
So Oxfam launched this campaign just last week, and we intend to run this campaign for 3 years. We will be updating the scorecard yearly and putting out a new one, and we hope to see real improvements by supermarkets as that happens. We'll also be highlighting key issues from the scorecard over the next 3 years. So you may know that the first issue that we looked at was how workers were being treated in shrimp supply chains, and we did specific research in Thailand and Indonesia looking at workers on vessels, workers on the docks who are primarily women, and workers in the processing plants who are also often women. And we found a whole host of worker rights violations across a number of these suppliers, in a number of factories, on the docks, and in the vessels. People who have lost limbs to poor safety conditions on vessels. As I was saying earlier, women who've been subjected to pregnancy tests, workers who haven't been able to take enough breaks. You know, we heard one factory that had 1,000 workers and only 9 restrooms for 1,000 workers who all go on break at similar times. So that's a problem when you don't even have basic break times, overtime being imposed on workers, workers not knowing what their real pay is because they aren't signing contracts. So these kinds of issues were the kinds of issues we found and that we think supermarkets can really help address. And that's the first issue that we've highlighted this year, but we'll be highlighting other issues as the years go on.
How can listeners become involved with the Behind the Barcodes campaign?
Well, we'd love for consumers and listeners to get involved in our campaign, and they can start by going on our website at behindthebarcode.org and signing the petition. That petition eventually is going to get given to supermarkets, so they'll be able to see just how many people signed our petition. And that's important because what we found in our previous campaign in Behind the Brands is that when consumers act and when consumers tell their supermarket what they want, companies will listen. Companies care about what consumers think. So if you care as a consumer about how workers are being treated in the food that you eat, you need to tell your supermarket to take that human suffering out of that food. And they'll do something about it because you are the reason why they have a business.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
That you have a voice in this conversation. Oxfam has put out this scorecard and put out a lot of materials, but really we've done so with the goal of getting consumers engaged, getting them aware about what's happening in their food, and getting them to really talk to supermarkets and talk to these companies. And they can do it in a whole host of ways. They can sign the petition online. We've got all kinds of actions on Facebook. If you go onto our Facebook page, you can share all kinds of material on Twitter. We've also been engaging the companies. So there's a whole host of ways for you to tell these supermarkets that you want to get human suffering out of your food, and we hope you'll join us.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Irit.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You are just listening to Irit Tamir, Director of Oxfam America's Private Sector Department. For more information, check on the web at oxfamamerica.org and behindthebarcodes.org. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to the podcast section of KEXP's website at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and at kexp.org.